I want to talk to you graduates today, but I knew we would have more than just you here, so I'll try to make this apply to all of us, because it will, but primarily to these special kids. A college student goes out and buys a new car, buys the best, fastest car he can. This was years and years ago. He bought a 2005 Bugatti 16.4, expensive, $1.2 million for his car. Takes it out, and while he's at a stoplight, an old man on a moped pulls up next to him. He's about 90 years old. The old man looks over at this sleek car and asks, "What kind of car you got there anyway?" And the young guy says, "It's a 2005 Bugatti. It cost me $1.2 million. "That's a lot of money. Why does it cost so much?" "Because this car can go from 0 to 340 in about 20 seconds. "Wow, that's fast. Can I have a look?" Guy said, "Sure." Old guy on his moped pokes his head in the guy's window, looks around, leans back on the moped. "Yeah, it's a pretty nice car." Just then the light changes. So the young guy thinks, "I'm going to show him what this car will do." And he hits the floor with the accelerator, and boom, in 20 seconds, he's at 320 miles an hour. Suddenly, he notices a dot in his rearview mirror that's getting closer and closer to him, and all of a sudden, whoosh, goes right by him. And then he's looking ahead. Miles ahead, he sees a dot coming at him. Whoosh, goes right by him. And he thought, "That looked just like that old man on a moped." I said, "How in the world?" And then all of a sudden, he looks in his rearview mirror, and he sees a dot coming at him, and boom, hits him right in the tail. Gets out, the old man, the moped, they're in bad shape. He said, "Are you hurt?" "Yeah." He said, "Can I help you?" "Yeah. You could unhook my suspenders from your side view mirror." Just about everywhere I've gotten to in my life, somebody has helped me get there one way or another. Getting from point A to point B, and I'll be honest, along the way I look back at what it was that it took to get me from here to there, often whether I was your all's age or the age I am now, somewhere in between, was a healthy dose of encouragement from somebody. Always needed it. You always need it. You always will. And I pray that you all have gotten it and will continue to get it from us anyway, because it's the only way to get from here to there. So in this hand gesture series, we started 2-3 weeks ago with fingers crossed, which were all about our salvation. "Are you going to heaven, Mark?" "Well, I hope so. My fingers are crossed." No. You should know more than that. It should mean more than that. Then we talked about thumbs up, thumbs down, how you can go through something. You think, "Man, this is terrible." But by the time God gets done with it and you, you're like, "You know what? That wasn't so bad." And then I'm gone last week to the beach, and we listened to Jimmy on the way home, and he had everybody hanging loose. I get back, and I see everybody doing this. It's like I'm surrounded by hippies now. I don't know what in the world. Hey, hang loose. So today, we're going to talk about high fives, because we're going to talk about encouragement. And I found a high five verse, at least in my mind, Matthew 25. The Lord says, "Well done, my good and faithful servant." I tried to find out where the high five came from. It's like trying to find out what's in a hot dog. Nobody really knows. Some claim that it came from a platoon in Vietnam with five soldiers who nicknamed themselves the high five. I couldn't verify that. Many believe it came from baseball player Glenn Burke. After his buddy Dusty Baker hit his 30th homer, he comes by the on-deck circle, and for the first time in anyone's mind, they saw them raise their hands and slap each other high five. Others say, and especially my Louisville Cardinal buddies, that University of Louisville basketball player Derek Smith invented the high five in 1978. Story is, his teammate Wiley Brown tried to give him a low five when Smith said, "No, up high." And the team adopted that as a symbol of their high jumping and leaping ability. They became the high five Louisville Cardinals. Not sure where it comes from. Wish I could tell you. It sure has caught on. And high fives signify something has been accomplished, something good has happened, something good has taken place. They're a form of encouragement. And we as a church offer all these graduates more than a gift bag this morning. We give them a big old high five. Amen, church? They deserve our high five. And it's not a stretch for me in my wild imagination to think about standing before the Lord someday, and after he says, "Well done, good and faithful servant," he gets off his throne, I get up off my knees, he walks over to me and says, "Hey, Mark, up top." High five. So I want to challenge not only our graduates today, but all of you, if you're ever going to hear the Lord say high five to you, there are three things that you need to be. Number one, first of all, you need to be real. Jesus pointed at children and said, unless you become like these little children right here, you'll never see the kingdom of heaven. Why would he say something like that? Because they're innocent, they have great faith, there's lots of attributes he wanted us to consider, but here's the one I think he wanted us to consider the most. They're genuine. You don't see little kids trying to be like some other person. You don't see them faking, wearing masks to pretend that they're something they're not. You see them being them. As annoying as they can be sometimes, they are the annoying them. They are them. They don't try to fake it. They're real. Jesus wants us to know if we're going to get from here to there and hear that well done and receive that high five someday, we got to do it by being who we are. Problem is, we like to compare ourselves to other people. Never a good idea. Two things will happen when you compare. Number one, you'll compare yourself to someone not doing it as well as you are, and then all of a sudden you'll feel better about yourself than you should. Or secondly, you'll compare yourself to somebody who's not doing it as well as you are, or who is doing it better than you are, and you'll feel depressed. Jesus did ask us to make a comparison once, believe it or not, and I am against comparisons, but I will never be against what Jesus said. Anybody know who he asked us to compare ourselves to? Jimmy Johnson didn't teach you all thing, did he? Except to hang loose. Who did Jesus tell us to compare ourselves to? Anybody? It's found in Matthew chapter 5. Unless your righteousness is better than the righteousness of the teachers of the law and the Pharisees, who are all fake, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. There's a comparison right there. So if I put the two verses together about become like little children, don't become like these people, it reads this way. If you don't become like children, you can't enter the kingdom of heaven. If you do become like the Pharisees, you can't enter the kingdom of heaven. Don't become like children, you ain't going. Do become like the Pharisees, you ain't going. His challenge to all of us, it's a timely challenge to these graduates. It's to be real. You kids are awesome. Why would you want to be like anybody else? You're awesome. Every single one of you, the attributes that you have and that you've shown, I pray that you're always who you are because that's who God made you to be and that's who we love. Be real. People are wearing masks a lot. You heard what the governor said the other day, so there'll be more mask wearing. Be careful. There was one lady who said this: husband and I went grocery shopping with masks, got home, took off mask, brought home wrong husband. Then she said, stay alert, people. I see the wheels turning with some of you women. I wonder if that would work. So far, I've been able to recognize everybody that I know already who's wearing masks, and I can still tell who they are, and I like that. There's one type of clothing that in recent years has become pretty popular and spiked in sales. It's called camouflage. Camouflage has a definition, a formal definition, hiding what you really look like so that you can blend into your environment. Now, there may be very good reasons to do that when you're hunting. There's never a good reason to do that when you're a Christian. A few years ago, I watched a show and introduced you to a character from China. His name was Lu Balin, who paints himself into scenes and portraits to where you can't hardly see him. In China, he's known as the Invisible Man. Well, I found some more pictures because they're so cool. Check out some of these paintings with Lu Balin. Look at that. And then there's one more. Is that cool or what? In the 1950s, the United States entered what is now known as the space race with Russia. The Russians were the first to put someone in orbit, so we decided, hey, we'll be the first to put someone on the moon. And there were all kinds of interesting challenges that came with that. One of the small details that made things complicated was how to sync up the watches of the astronauts with the watches of the engineers here on Earth because of the pressure and temperatures and things that the moon brought with it. So they enlisted the help of Swiss watchmakers to submit watches that could all be tested, and they did. And the watch they landed on, the only watch that has ever made it to the moon, is the Omega Speedmaster watch, which runs for $3,000. You can buy one today. Or you can go to Chinatown in New York and buy a knockoff for $50. So since you're such a savvy crowd, I want you to tell me which one's the real one that sells for $3,000 and which is the knockoff that you can buy for $50. All right? Take a good look at them. Who says the one on the left, as you face it, is the real Omega Speedmaster? Hands, please. Who says the one on the right? Okay. Most of you voted for the one on the right. You are the people that I'm going to put my grandkids through college with selling you fake watches. The FBI and the Secret Service have a team of people whose entire purpose is to be able to determine whether or not a $100 bill is real or fake. So guess what they do to determine it? They never study a fake. They get themselves very familiar with all the details and specific nuances of a real $100 bill. If they become so familiar with the real thing, they'll always be able to tell when there's a fake. If we want to get to that heavenly high five where the Lord says, well done, then we need to be real. There's a second challenge. We need to be ready. You graduates have spent the following amount of time in your life, and I doubt you've ever added it up. You've been breathing for 936 weeks. You passed 2,160 days of school. You've been eating for 7,488 hours, mostly pizza, tacos, and chips. You've been sleeping for 52,500 hours. That goes up by 10,000 if you're talking about Will and Katie. And you've been taking up space for about 9,434,880 minutes. And if you guys live an average lifespan, you will sleep 24 of those years. You will eat 6 of those years. You will drive 5 of those years. And you will be sick for at least 3 of those years. See how much you have to look forward to. And with all that breathing and schooling and eating and sleeping and taking up space, your parents have taken those 9,434,880 minutes and done everything they humanly possibly could do to help you be who you are and to help you be ready for where you go. All of that made me think of, and I know this shows my age, an Andy Griffith clip with Opie in a birdcage. And I knew when I decided to show this clip, these kids are going to be like, who's Andy Griffith? Does he come to early service? Well, I know who Andy Griffith is, and most of you do. And this is kind of a tearjerker when you got kids leaving home. But check out this episode of Opie in the birdcage.
Well, you remember you took over this job because they lost their ma? Well, there's that one other thing that she would have done. That's to let them go. Let them be on their own, be free, like it's intended to be.
But what if they can't fly away? Maybe I didn't do all the right things. I mean, to count like I wasn't really their ma.
No, you did all the right things. I expect they'll be able to fly.
Of course, Paul, if they can't fly away, then I could keep them as pets, couldn't I? They could live right here, couldn't they? But they don't want to be pets. They're supposed to fly away, like you said. Things. I hope you can fly away. Please fly away. Please.
He made it, Paul. He's okay. That was not.
You got two to go now.
Go on, Lincoln. Do like your brother. Fly. Please fly. Go on, Lincoln. Follow them. Hurry. They're okay, Paul. They all flew off okay.
Guess I did a good job, huh, Paul?
You sure did, son.
Cage sure looks awful empty, don't it, Paul?
Yes, son, it sure does. But don't the trees seem nice and full?
There's a lot of good things ahead of you all. Hope and blessing after blessing going to come your way, no doubt about that. Good things that you should anticipate. I like to be in your age. I look forward to everything. I like being my age. I still look forward to everything. I get Charlie's age. I don't know what I'll do at that point, but I've seen, though, many young people with stars in their eyes leave home and leave church and do okay until they face some kind of adversity or difficulty. And without the presence of Derek and Erica there, or their family, or the church as a whole, can be overwhelming sometimes. And it's important to have a hopeful outlook and expect positive things. But I want to tell you this morning, it's important to anticipate trouble and hard time as well. Jesus made it clear in John 16, in this world you will have trouble, but take heart, I've overcome the world. He wants you to anticipate the trouble, but he didn't leave you just there. There's two thoughts in that. There's a warning and a promise. Anticipate that you will have trouble in this world, but anticipate that I've overcome it also, and I'll take care of you. The word anticipation made me think of three things. This is how my mind works. It made me think of ketchup, the Heinz commercial back in the day where you couldn't get the ketchup out of the bottle, and then Carly Simon singing, anticipation. Remember that? And then it made me think of coaching T-ballers. Anybody in here ever coach T-ballers? Hands up. It's why you got no hair. Now, there's certain things you can't anticipate when you're coaching T-ballers. I was in high school, and they asked me to coach a T-ball team. I knew it was a bad idea because I wasn't patient with little people at that point, and I didn't like being yelled at by moms and dads and umpires and all that, but I agreed to. Said, we got to have somebody. The last team in the league doesn't have a coach. So I did. We practiced and practiced. But until that first game, I realized, you know, I would have never thought of highlighting that because I would have thought they knew that already. So we get to our first game, and I should have anticipated it, but I didn't. First game, I send out my first batter, my leadoff hitter. He's the best player on the team. He looks at the ump. As soon as he steps in the box, he does one of these numbers and shuffles the dirt with his feet like he saw on TV, and he's ready. And then he said, timeout. We never talked about timeout. You're in T-ball here. There's no timeout. Just hit the ball. So he comes over and he says, no lie, coach, what do I do when I hit the ball? Run! You run. And then it hit me. I don't think I ever told him that. Just assumed. I got it, coach. Little guy goes back out there. The thing I love the best about T-ball is watching the opposing team. Because they buy these monster ball gloves, and they're only about this tall. They look like mutant lobsters. And then they go into that cheer. Hey, batter, 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 swing! Hey, batter, 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 gets on your nerves real quick. Batter, 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 swing! So my kid steps into it, closes his eyes, looks to the heavens, which he should have been praying because that's the only way he's going to hit it. Boom, swings, ball dribbles off the tee. He's just standing there. So kid's on my, run! And he starts running. Down the third baseline he goes. Wrong way! Passes third base, headed down the left field line toward the fence. At this point, the other team picked up the ball. They're chasing him. At that point, their coach is chasing them. My whole team leaves the dugout. We're all running toward the outfield. I could have never saw that coming. I game planned every possible thing that could happen except running down the third baseline and heading to left field. Knowing what to do is a matter of expectation and anticipation. So again, here's what Jesus taught. In this world, you will have trouble. Expect it and anticipate it. Jesus also said, I've overcome the world. Expect it. Anticipate it. When trouble comes, it's important we turn to God, not away from Him. How many kids have left church? And man, were they solid while they were here and while they were surrounded by people doing and believing the same things. But they get out there, and whether it's a liberal professor or a dorm party or whatever, it's hard. And you better be ready for it. But you can do that knowing that Jesus promised He can overcome all this. And we're still here to lift you up and encourage you and offer you anything we can when it comes to spiritual help. I got in trouble once in grade school. Once a week. Okay. Once a day. And I had a buddy who had, he taught me how to take a spanking from the principal, because I needed to know. And he said, when he goes to hit you with a paddle, and it was one of those long paddles, he took Proverbs literally, you know, spare the rod, spoil the child kind of thing. And my buddy said, listen, when what he does is he holds you out here so that he can basically step into it like a ball bat and just wail on you. He said, if you'll just scoot close to him, his arm comes up like that. Yes. That makes sense to me. So I blew a bubble. I wasn't supposed to have bubble gum. Probably would have been okay, but it landed in Teresa Jones's red hair, which was my way of saying, I love you, Teresa. She didn't take it that way, though. And I go to the principal's office, and I'm thinking, okay, I'm gonna try what Ricky's told me to do. Makes sense to me. Because no lie, Principal Hughes, he held me out here. And I thought, oh, yeah, he's going to get some leverage. So as soon as he went to paddle me, I stepped in like that. And no lie, his arm went up like that. And there we were going in circles. I mean, if you would have looked in the principal's office, you'd why are those two dancing? I don't hear any music. We're just... There's a spiritual point here. When people experience trouble, they tend to pull away from God or blame God or hold God more at a distance. I'm going to tell you right, it'll hurt more if you do that. The way to make it hurt less is to get closer to God. Those times when trouble comes and you're like, man, I never saw this coming, and I can't believe I'm dealing with this, and why would God allow this to happen? And you're tending to pull away and think, well, there's no use trying to be good, trying to be spiritual, trying to be godly. That's the exact thing the devil wants you to think, because the closer you get to God, the less it hurts. Closer to the principle I got, the less it stung. Same principle is true in life. Listen, be real. Be ready. Trouble's coming. And let me close with this. Be resilient. There's a popular word for kids in college today, and the word is quit. More people are dropping out of college that start college today than at any point in our history. There's lots of reasons for that. But there comes a time when the word quit becomes popular. It's why I'm often encouraged by older people, and I think you all should be too, people who have been there doing it, still there doing it, and showed you how to do it, and showed you how to keep doing it. I called Raymond and Reva Stipp Friday because they were celebrating their 69th anniversary. Is that awesome or what? I mean, 69, that's more than half my life. Impressive. It did remind me of a college kid who went on a blind date and came back, and the roommate said, how'd your date go? And she said, terrible. So what happened? Said, well, he showed up in a 1932 Rolls Royce. She said, well, that's awesome. That's an expensive car. What's so bad about that? She said, he was the original owner. For the graduates with us today, there's going to come a time when the word quit is popular and won't leave you alone. Truth for all of us is sometimes life is what we want, and then life is what we get, and we have to balance that. If anyone was ever tempted by the word quit, it had to be my favorite character in the Bible, the Apostle Paul, who wrote this in 2 Corinthians 4. We're hard-pressed on every side. There's an acknowledgement of truth right there, but not crushed. Perplexed, but not in despair. Persecuted, but not abandoned. Struck down, but not destroyed. This is a challenge for young people. It's a challenge for all of us. Perseverance, resiliency have become lost traits in society today. The one who just wrote those words is the same one who was preaching one day in a city called Derby, and they had a rock concert in his honor. They stoned him. And what did he do? He continued to preach. And then they threw him in prison. And what did he do? He converted the jailer. And then he's dragged in front of kings. And what did he do? He turned the palace into a pulpit. And then he's put into solitary confinement. And what did he do? He turned the prison into an author's workshop and wrote 2/3 of the New Testament. Every disappointment for him was a door. Every interruption was an opportunity. The difference between young people who succeed with their faith intact and young people who do not will come down to perseverance. Not how hard they got knocked down, how hard they were willing to try to get back up. Need to be resilient. This is Johnny Erickson. Great skier back in the day, involved in an accident, became a quadriplegic, and now paints beautiful portraits holding the brush in her teeth and inspires people everywhere. Franklin Delano Roosevelt became president in a wheelchair. Sir Walter Scott, the inventor and greatest practitioner of the historical novel, limped through life on club feet. Thomas Edison's teacher, who taught him when he was young, said he was too stupid to learn anything. Beethoven is one of the most admired composers in the history of the world with his physical disability. Moses was slow of speech, wrote the first 5 books of the Bible, led 6 million people across the desert. His name is a household name thousands of years later. He lived to be 120 years old, and he walked to his own funeral. They say there's no oil without squeezing, there's no wine without pressing the grapes, there's no fragrance without crushing the flowers, and there's no real joy in life without some sorrow. I've been preaching it for years. I'll continue. No flower can bloom in paradise that wasn't transplanted from Gethsemane. The prize always comes after the race. The joy always comes after the sorrow. The crown always comes after the cross. Be resilient. Close with this. In 1986, the New York City Marathon, 20,000 people entered the race. Anybody happen to know who came in first? 1986, New York City Marathon. Okay, I'll forgive you that, because I don't know who came in first either. Anybody know who came in last? Oh, I do. His name was Bob Wieland. Finished dead last. His marathon time, Cooper, I heard about Derek talking about you running. Check out this marathon time. 4 days, 2 hours, 47 minutes, 17 seconds. The slowest marathon in history. But the thing that made it memorable and special was Bob Wieland ran the New York City Marathon with his arms. In 1971, he had his legs blown off in a battle in Vietnam. So to run, he sits on a 15-pound saddle and catapults himself one arm length at a time. And he started that bad race and finished it 4 days later, running on his arms. He can get up to a fast pace of 1 mile an hour. And Bob Wieland credits his faith as the reason he's able to keep running. I want you to hear his testimony that he summed up at the end of the marathon. He said, I've been through nothing compared to what they did to my Lord. He died for me, so I'll run the race for him. He gave up so much for me to ever consider giving up on him. That's a man who deserves a high five. And I believe someday he'll get it because he was real, he was ready, and he was resilient. That's the challenge for you kids and the challenge for all of us moving forward. Be real, be ready, be resilient, and you'll hear God say someday, well done, good and faithful servant. And again, I can't help but think he might get up off of that throne, walk up to you, and say, hey, kids, up top. High five. Amen.